Welcome to another episode of the Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders on Washington, Wall Street, and the world. And now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thank you so much for joining us again this week. As promised, we're back. We're back. It is the 30th day of March. Almost coming to the end of the quarter here. The market came in like a bear. Remember, we talked about it. That's what March does. Came in like a bear, going out like a bull, going out like a lamb here. The weather's getting better. Nice, huh? Which, well, a little bit for a lot of parts of the country. It's been brutal, hasn't it, on the West Coast? We're worried about our friends out there. Horrible, horrible weather. And we're seeing stock markets tick up. We saw a golden cross. What does that mean? What it means, it's a technical term, but when the 50-day moving average goes through the 200-day moving average, one way or the other, it's either a golden cross, we like those, or a death cross. I don't need to explain that, do I? A death cross should be pretty much self-explanatory. I'll leave that there with you. If you need help, you can call Harry Jennings directly and he'll explain it to you. Okay, so markets are rallying here coming into the quarter. Why? We still have a bit of a banking issue to get through. We've got a Fed that's going on pause. We've got inflation that still seems persistent. What has changed? And why has the risk trade been on this quarter when it was off all of 2022? All of those nice value, solid balance sheet stocks that Farr liked in 2022 haven't done very well in 2023. Sometimes the market doesn't align with your investment strategy and discipline. And if you get out of sync, it feels awful. But I've never managed money quarter to quarter. And when things don't make sense, meaning when the fundamentals don't match up with what the market is doing, ladies and gentlemen, Farr sticks with the fundamentals and with the discipline every time. So not fun market in the quarter. I mean, you make some money, but have you made as much money as the market has? I haven't. And yet I'm not throwing in the towel here on this quarter. This is when you stick to your discipline. The other thing I do is I talk to Kenny Polcari at Case Capital Advisors, the CEO, the voice of decades of the New York Stock Exchange. Welcome back, Kenny.
Michael, it's always a pleasure to have me. Thank you.
It is a pleasure to have me. And, you know, I think you should do that. You know, Henry Kissinger was heard to testify once, raising his right hand on the Bible. Yes, I promise I'll tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me. I actually heard Henry say that. It was really, really funny. And he could be very, very, Henry Kissinger can be very, very funny. Still around with us, of course. So help you, Kenny, and happy birthday, Kenny. Happy birthday, Kenny. You don't look any older. You look older than I do, but you don't look any older than last time I saw you.
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know, I just can't even believe 62 years. I just can't believe 62 years has come and gone, but it is what it is.
You get Social Security. You can retire now.
I hear you. I'll put that off for another couple of years because I don't plan on going anywhere yet. I don't know about you, but pretty soon it's going to be your birthday. And then we're going to have this whole celebration around you. And you and I will then once again be the same age.
I think I'm going to skip that week. I'm going to take off that day. All right. KP, why is the risk trade back on? Why is the market making new highs? And why are the markets looking forward to a Fed ease? We don't want a Fed ease.
No, we don't want a Fed ease. And actually, it's confusing to me that people actually think we're going to raise rates in May, which I think we are at 25 base points. Then we're going to pause. So we're going to pause in June. But then they think they're going to start to cut rates in July, September, October, November by 25 apiece. So down 100 basis points by the time Santa Claus comes. I don't understand that. It's confusing to me. Inflation is still well above the target, the 2% target that they say, which I think is going to be redefined to 3% anyway before the summer's out. But inflation is still running much higher than that. So I don't see any justification or any reason why they think rates are going to get cut. Unless, of course, they think the bottom's going to fall out. And if the bottom falls out, then that's not going to be a very pretty picture, right? And then you might say, okay, but I don't think that's going to happen in 2023. I think it might happen in early 2024. You might see much more stress on the economy after all the rate hikes, but I don't see it happening by July or August of this year. And so therefore I'm not in that camp. But yes, the market is rallying because it's rallying on that assumption. And look what's happening in tech, right? Anything tech is up. The XLK is up nearly 19%. Communications up 18%. Right? Those semis are up 20%. Artificial intelligence up 24%. I mean, it's crazy, anything tech. But these were also sectors that got absolutely creamed last year. And so yeah. I think there is a lot of money, a lot of investors that are trying to look through the rate hike and look down the road and go shopping for opportunity. But like you, I'm in that camp that, you know, you want to be more conservative in this unsteady environment. Doesn't mean I don't have any exposure to that. I do. But like you, I'm overweight, kind of the boring stuff, right? The stuff that people need that's going to weather the storm, because I go right back to my roots, just like you said.
You still think there's a storm coming, KP? You still think there's a storm coming?
I think there's more volatility coming. I don't think it's going to be a hurricane the way that Jamie Dimon had defined it, or the way that Mikey Wilson from Morgan Stanley defines, you know, the way he talks, you think the end of the world is coming. He's talking about S&P 3000, which is down 24% from where we are today, which doesn't make any sense to me. I think if we see a 7 or 8% pullback, that's actually normal within the trading band of normal, right? Anything between 0 and 9.9% is considered a kind of within the normal trading range. I don't see a 24%, 22% move down from here. I just don't see it. Now, I suppose, you know, if the Fed continues to raise rates in May and then the market suddenly gets soft and we have this commercial real estate crunch that everyone's now talking about, that it might get a little bit ugly. And, you know, maybe lending standards are going to get tighter after the Silicon Valley debacle. By the way, you know, we can talk about that too, because I think they should hold every one of those people, including the VCs and the C-suite, completely responsible. But that's a whole nother conversation. But I do think that they might tighten up lending standards. And so will that put some pressure? Sure, it'll put some pressure. Maybe that'll do some of the work that the Fed needs to be done to slow it all down. But do I think it's going to completely crash? I do not.
I've said for a while that I thought that the Fed should pause because I think they've raised enough and they just need to watch and see if it's right. Been enough. I mean, at some point you stop. Let me do an analogy here. You've got a patient. You've got a patient with a racing heartbeat. And yep. What you do with a patient with a racing heartbeat is you begin to give them drugs to slow the heart rate. And so let's give them some drugs right now. And we wait 5 minutes and it's not coming down and we give them more drugs. Did we wait long enough? Maybe not, but we give them more drugs and the right. Heartbeat's still racing and we give them more drugs 5 minutes later. And all of a sudden, you know, it starts to go down a little, but we're not satisfied. So we give them more drugs. In an hour, all of a sudden, the heart rate has plunged, the blood pressure has plunged, and we're reaching for the paddles to keep the poor SOB alive here. And this is the analogy that we're talking about with the Federal Reserve spread out basically over an 18-month period.
Okay, so I hear you and I agree with that, but here's where I think it has to go. We are now at 475.5 and the range on the Fed rate, right? Inflation is still running at 5.5, 6. So we're
not down yet. The heart rate is still fast.
Okay, but and we talked about this. The Fed needs to get the terminal rate at or just above the inflation rate. So I think another 25 basis point hike is going to get us to 5.5 and a quarter, which is almost right. And we'll find out tomorrow with the PCE and then next month with CPI and PPI. We'll see what inflation has done, right? Then I think they're going to halt. They're going to pause because if the PCE comes in at 5.1% or 4.7% core, then we're going to be right at that point where we're, you know, supply almost equals demand, right, in terms of the rates. So that's why I think we need one more, and then they're going to hold it. And then I think they should hold it. I don't think they should lower them.
But you don't want You don't want the Fed. Everybody wants the Fed to ease because we've been so desperate for this easy money, low rate environment when we all made money that we forget why the Fed eased. The Fed will ease only when the patient's blood pressure plummets and they're reaching for the paddles. And ease is when they're reaching for the paddles and everything will suck when that happens. Everything will suck when that happens. You don't want that. In fact, you want the Fed to go sideways and be quiet. And it would be lovely if we didn't hear from the Fed for again for 2 years with any sort
of innovation. But you know what the problem is, Michael? There's not a lot of guys like you and me that are around that were here in 75, 76, 77. There's a lot of these portfolio managers today that came into this business in 2006, 7 when rates plummeted and then stayed there for 13 years. And they don't understand how to manage risk in a rising rate environment. You and I do. We lived it. Look, we have the gray hair to prove it. By the way, whenever I'm with you, my heartbeat goes up because I just think you're the greatest.
You're the greatest. But let me tell you something. You know who the greatest? The greatest are my two bond managers, Scott Stroud, Andy Garcia, have done a beautiful job managing through this rising rate environment. And if they had been managing the bond portfolio at Silicon Valley Bank,
right,
Silicon Valley Bank could still be in business.
Well, because Silicon Valley Bank didn't have a chief risk officer, which is a whole nother conversation. And quite honestly, they thought that the Fed raised rates so abruptly as if nobody knew the Fed was raising rates. It was a big secret.
Everybody else in the world knew. Everybody knew. Insurance company. Everybody had to manage a rising rate environment. What in the hell was wrong with those guys? Right. And I think you're right. They ought to be held accountable. And
absolutely.
So should the damned audit committee and the risk committee on the board and everybody else.
And Mary. And let's just flip to the regulatory side. Mary Daly also should be held responsible because it was under her watch that, you know, she that didn't go anywhere. And so
you've got regulators out there, right? I mean, you've got regulators out there who aren't regulating, and then Congress comes back and raises hell and says, we need more regulation.
Right.
No, you needed to do your damn jobs and regulate when you were supposed to regulate.
That's right, because there's plenty of regulations, but let's not go there. And why are you and I screaming at each other? We just get too excited when we're on together.
We get too excited because these are issues that matter, and people don't get what's going on. People,
I hear you, and we're passionate about it, Michael.
We're in this. We live in this country of a blame game, you know, where you're either part of the oppressor or the oppressed class, and the oppressed class is being encouraged and coddled so that as long as you're a victim, you know, you've got rights, and somebody's got to do something for you. I don't like the division in America now, Kenny. I really don't.
No,
so, Kenny, I gotta go. We gotta go. Fred and Ethel, what are you telling them now? Should they be hopping into all of these tech stocks and AI stuff?
No, well, here's what they should do, Fred and Ethel. Depending on who they are and where they are, they should have some exposure to artificial intelligence because, quite honestly, Michael, that's never going away. But what I do think you should do is stay the course. You know me. I'm always the kind of person that you build the right portfolio. It manages it through the difficult times. You use any pullback in the really decent names as an opportunity.
I think Kenny's making a very good point, folks. Emotion is the foe of the long-term investor. Every time, emotion will lead you to the wrong decision.
Exactly.
And this is why when you listen to Pokhari and Farr saying the same thing, just keep in mind you're listening to over 70 years of full-time market investing experience. We've seen a lot in those years. There are people who know more than we do, but for folks who have been doing this for 5 years, there's no way they can share our perspective. So we're bringing you something that others can't do. It helps being a little bit older. Kenny Pokhari, President CEO of Case Capital Advisors, my very dear friend. Happy, happy birthday. We're going to be back with Dan Mahaffey. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Farcast. Now it's time for political analyst Dan Mahaffey and your host, Michael Farr.
We're back. Never boring with Kenny Pokhari. It's just never boring with Kenny. So glad you're with us, ladies and gentlemen, here at the very end of March 2023. Joining me now, as he does every week, God bless him and keep him and make his light and face to shine upon him, Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, our senior political analyst on the Farcast, now in season six. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Michael. And I have to say, we always have great first segment guests, but to keep the energy going after Kenny is such a challenge.
It's a heavy lift.
Yeah, I know. We gotta recharge that battery, plug us in the morning. Espresso he has.
Yeah, I teased him. You know, I said, I think you must be on your meds today. We got through a lot, but and then he just laughs and laughs. Okay. Dan, we have lots going on. We have Ron DeSantis surging ahead within two weeks. We've had a complete reversal of former President Trump versus DeSantis. What do you make of that right now, this flip in the poll numbers that's been this dramatic?
Look, I think the legal cases and the way Trump used these to raise attention among his base has brought a lot of the base back to him. Look, there are a lot of people in the donor class, in the establishment, all of those who want DeSantis. The money is behind DeSantis. But if the establishment and money shows how the Republican Party worked, I wouldn't be talking to you and probably be working in the second term of a Jeb Bush administration right now. Okay. So despite all the all that support from the so-called core of the Republican establishment, there is still the base very much in love with Trump. And the question for a lot of the MAGA diehards is, if I have the option to vote for Trump versus a corporate diet Trump, as it were, I'm going to pick the full flavor original product.
Are you really? Okay, well, we'll wait and see. I spoke with Greg Valliere earlier this week in New Orleans. He and I gave a speech to the Hightower crowd, about 150 Hightower advisors. It was a terrific, terrific group. Greg was saying you still count out former President Trump at your own peril. He seems to keep pulling genies out of bottles, but he really feels that most are just tired of him and don't think that he will be worth the baggage when it comes November. Right. You have a different opinion?
Most are tired of him, but in a fragmented Republican field, you only need a plurality to win.
Do you think, Greg's talking about the possibility of a third party candidate emerging. Is that, are you hearing anything about that? What do you think? And what
we always have that. We hear that. It's sort of that traditional, I call it like the West Wing fantasy that comes around every now and then pre-election, you know, usually about 18 months out. Look, we were doing this for a while, remember, kicking the tires on, would it be a Mark Cuban type or a Howard Schultz or even a yes. Bob Iger, who is the yes. CEO waiting in the woodwork to save the fragmented country? But you boil down to it, frankly, I don't know why any of them would want the job. And second, the way our rules are written to get someone on a ballot at the state level are so thoroughly controlled by the two parties. People yeah. don't understand that level of how the electoral infrastructure really works against anyone trying to shake up the system.
Okay. Well, we will watch and we will look forward to your insights as to that process as it goes forward. Greg thought that there is a 50-50 chance that we will have a Biden-Trump ticket ultimately in 2024. That's next year, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think, Dan?
I'll go a little bolder and say it's probably 60-40 that happens.
Whoa, God, that's just so cringeworthy. My stomach just fell down to my knees. God.
Yeah, so I'm saying it's 60-40 it happens, and the polling says probably 60-40, 70-30 Americans want something else.
Yeah, well, list me in the group that would like something else. Of 330 million Americans, right, ladies and gentlemen? These are the best two we've got to be the leader of the free world. Come on! All right. And just for those who always remind me when I make political comments, yes, I know that was one. Okay. I don't need the notes. All right. Moving on, Dan, the Federal Reserve seems to be moving a bit sideways. Tell me about the political side of what's going to happen to the Fed here. We know Elizabeth Warren has said she's going to run again for the Senate. Does that take her out of the presidential race? And is she going to stay on Jay Powell's neck? And will she make any ground? Will she find any traction in doing so?
I think there's been two avenues that the Fed is coming under political pressure right now. Obviously, we've talked about Silicon Valley Bank. There were those oversight hearings, which actually found the members there, they weren't looking for gotcha moments. I think they were actually trying to genuinely understand what the Fed was doing. And that wasn't as, I'd say, politicized, although it certainly could be as we get closer to the election. With Jay Powell, though, standing, you know, seemingly standing pat, or as it was said when he met with Republican lawmakers yesterday, he met with the Republican conference in a closed-door meeting. What I heard coming from that meeting is, one, surprisingly, he did not talk about the debt ceiling with them at all. And two, he pointed to the charts that show only one more hike this year. Yeah. So sending a message that they are going to slow this down, and that perhaps the political heartburn that the Fed could cause in 2024, maybe they're going to try and just have that all done before the end of this year.
It could be the last hike, and certainly the banking, bit of a banking crisis with Silicon Valley Bank shares, which has not been systemic. It's been episodic, and it looks very much contained at this point, in spite of various policy and comments that seemed a bit off base from Secretary Yellen.
And the one thing I'll add that is not getting a lot of, let's say, open discussion, but I know I've talked about it with quite a few people behind the scenes this week. How do we learn from the Silicon Valley Bank episode? Because we have just given a bad actor or disinformation actor a playbook on how to start a bank run on a U.S. institution.
Yep. It's an awful thing to say, but if you understand the way banks work, if all depositors show up at the same time and demand their money from any bank, including JP Morgan, they don't have the money. They will not pass that solvency test. All banks, so if you have a run on the bank, that's what it does. So what do we put in place to prevent that and still assure liquidity? And as I said before, you know, we might as well just all do business with the Federal Reserve directly if they're going to guarantee all deposits. And because otherwise, if they guarantee the deposits throughout the current banking system, that encourages the current banks. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. If you're running a bank and you know that all of your depositors' funds are guaranteed, you can take more risk, because if you lose, the government pays. We call this moral hazard. Moral hazard. You know, this happened to me as a child. I had three sisters. And when my three sisters, I had a World War II, I still have a World War II veteran father, a child of the Depression, who did not spare the rod, and he was not going to spoil the child. And when my sisters would get mad at me, as we got to be about 12 or something, like I was 12, I was a little older, one of them would get mad at me and just start screaming and fake crying and go, "Daddy!" And he would come in and hit me. That's all it took. If there was problems in the room, I was the first one that would get grabbed by the scruff of the neck and hauled out of the room. I was like, "She did it." And it was just deaf ears. So if you're the one that gets punished and yet you didn't do the crime, this is like going to jail for something you didn't do. This is when the punishment or the consequence is meted out against someone other than the perpetrator. So your question is entirely apt, and I don't think we have an answer under the current banking system at all. But what Dan also just suggested there, ladies and gentlemen, was something even more nefarious, that this could be used as another type of weapon against the United States financial system. It's a vulnerability. We found it out. So at some point, in order to get around that vulnerability, the government will, in my opinion, have to backstop all of those asset deposits, period. I don't see that they'll have a choice. And I think foreign governments recognize that. Speaking of which, Dan, and I'm running out of time here, sure. The president of Taiwan, I hope I get this right. President, is it Tsai Ing-wen or C?
Tsai Ing-wen.
Holy crap, I got it the first time. Tsai Ing-wen is traveling through the United States on the way to South America, and a meeting perhaps scheduled at the Reagan Library on her way back through with Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, and the committee. He's talking about bringing the members of the Committee on China, which is the, I think they ought to call it the Committee to Hate China. The I Hate China Committee. Yeah. We all hate China Committee. But that's what we can all agree on in Washington. Only thing you agree on in Washington. By the way, before I move off of it, and I know I'm short on time, fabulous article in the Wall Street Journal. I guess in the op-eds, but a great thing. It's called DEI at Law Schools Could Bring Down America by Tunku Varadarajan. Varadarajan. Tunku Varadarajan. Brilliant article on how political wokeness, and avoiding certain topics is going to decimate law schools. Number of lines in there that are good, and this was kind of a guilty pleasure reading this. But among the cohorts into which America is being divided, this author added, dividing people into oppressive and oppressed classes. Oppressive and oppressed classes. You're either the victim or the victimizer in America now, and the majority get to claim victimhood. And isn't that wonderful? It's a brilliant article.
Well, I think you're getting this. I'm going to tie these two threads together, as people tend not to. We are not going to prevail in a competition with China, or in this case, let's be specific, the Chinese Communist Party. We are not going to prevail if we are a nation of victims.
Correct. That's exactly my
point. But that we also have to understand how to build, let's build resilience in ourselves and our people, understanding our values, how we push this forward. Because we this week at CSPC actually honored the chairman of that committee, Michael Gallagher from Wisconsin, a young Republican, a great leader, former Marine intelligence officer. He's got more degrees and even a PhD, more degrees than I would even know what to do with. And he is leading this committee, and he has actually gone at pains to say, this is not a committee focused on China or Chinese civilization or the Chinese people. In many ways, they are just as much victims of the Chinese Communist Party as we Americans are facing our economic impact, the pandemic, and the threat of war in the future. All of that is the Chinese Communist Party run by Xi Jinping. And that is what we need to focus this competition on. And that's why they are very angry about this Tsai Ing-wen transiting through the United States. We're making pains that this is not an official visit by her. It is a transit. But we saw what happened when Pelosi visited the island last time, the near blockade that took place. And it was the Taiwanese who actually, Speaker McCarthy had wanted to go to Taiwan like Pelosi, and it was the Taiwanese who suggested, let's meet in California on the way back. Look, this will be something to keep an eye on. What is the Chinese response? The thing about the Chinese response, though, is each time they get harder and harder on Taiwan, you also start to see Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, the Philippines, and others move closer and closer to the U.S. That pressure balance, and I think, too, our preoccupation, we so often see these headlines, invasion of Taiwan by 2025, 26. We need to stop thinking about the dates and more about the capabilities and what are the tailwinds and headwinds for any Chinese invasion of Taiwan.
Yep.
The more the region is opposed and united against them, the greater that headwind is to any successful invasion of Taiwan. So the more bluster and anger they show, their overreaction sometimes works to our benefit. We just don't want to inadvertently provoke a third world war.
Dan, I think it's very sobering comments, and I think very apt, and I wish more people would be able to listen to the Farcast and hear your insights. I think they are very, very helpful. Excellent points all. We will keep a close eye on this. And Dan, also, I'm also noticing that China seems to has just started making a little more noise about caring about their economy, caring about economic growth. Maybe tech isn't so bad. Far had been hopeful that they were going to continue to shoot themselves in the foot economically, and it looks like maybe their feet are giving them some problems. They're beginning to notice developing a bit of a limp.
There's a few missing toes.
Well, you know, you have a few missing toes, and you develop a little bit of a limp. That can get your focus. You know, foot trouble and foot pain, Dan, is a problem, which is why
when your feet
always,
hurt,
when
you
your
hurt
feet
all over.
Hurt, you go to Dr. Scholl's. Dr. Scholl's has saved more folks and more foot pain around the world. I mean, what a national, international hero your great-great-uncle was?
Great-great-uncle, yes.
Great-great-uncle, Dr. Scholl. Dr. Scholl was, see how I did that, ladies and gentlemen, the shot in the foot? This is years of television and media that lets you do that one. Anyway, we do appreciate it. China's a very serious, and we're going to watch what happens with Tsai Ing-wen and her meeting or not. Dan Mahaffey is the Director of Policy at the Center for the Presidency, Study of the Presidency in Congress, our senior political analyst. Thank you, Dan. We're going to be back with Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com, see what he's seeing when we come back on the Farcast.
Michael Farr and the Farcast are proud to support Heroes, Inc. Heroes supports the spouses and children of law enforcement officers and firefighters who gave their lives in the line of duty to the greater Washington, D.C. community. Their singular goal is to honor the supreme sacrifice made by these individuals by caring for their families. Heroes' work begins within 24 hours of the tragic loss and continues indefinitely. We invite you to learn more about Heroes' mission at heroes.org. We hope that you will consider supporting Heroes as they endeavor to honor those who protect us. That's heroes.org. Heroes, here for you, here for good. And now, back to the Farcast and your host, Michael Farr.
We hope you're enjoying this week's edition of the Farcast. Please share us with friends and colleagues. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. What a terrific Farcast we've had this morning. Just terrific, starting with Kenny Polcari. It's not hard to get Kenny going. It's just not hard to get Kenny excited about things. Dan Mahaffey is insightful as usual. And now, as promised, Mark Hamrick from Bankrate. He's the senior economic analyst. He's the Washington bureau chief. Oh, gosh, Mark and I have known one another for 25 years, I think, maybe more. We're going to begin to date and age, both of us, so I'll stop that right now. He was president of the National Press Club. He's been around Washington. I mean, he's a Washington insider, but he gets our business, and he's as articulate as they get. Hey, welcome back, Mark Hamrick.
Michael, you're very kind. I'm so happy that we went to elementary school together, that we've known one another all these many years. And it's always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
All these many years. Yeah, we're, you know, at 39 years old, I don't know what life's going to be like when we turn 40, Mark. That's going to be big. Mark, we've talked about markets bounding back here coming into the final part of the first quarter. Now at the end of the first quarter of 2023. It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride. It's certainly been an emotional, volatile one with all of the banks, with the Federal Reserve. What's going to happen next? We've got international issues plaguing us a bit now. We talked with Dan Mahaffey about the president of Taiwan's visit to the U.S. and will she meet with Kevin McCarthy? Will Kevin McCarthy go out to the Reagan Library and meet with her? And what's China going to do about it? Why is China so threatened about the president of Taiwan meeting? I mean, Mahaffey covered it, I thought, very well, but I'd love your insights. And the risk rate is back on. Risk rate is back on here. Tech stocks are doing well. The growth index was up big for the quarter. And those core value stocks that did so beautifully in 2022, not so much. So why the shift, Mark? Do you think it'll hold? And what happens if all these people who think we're going into recession are correct? There are only 16 questions there. Pick one.
Yes. Well, yeah, a lot to unpack there. But let me just sort of begin by saying, I think probably last time we talked, Michael, from an investment perspective, I think usually you don't want to disassociate yourself too far from the notion of don't fight the Fed here. And yet the Fed may be about ready to go to a neutral corner here in the sense of signaling that it may be close, if not at the end of the rate raising cycle, which is now over a year old and has been the most aggressive in our adult lifetimes.
Yes.
And so that's, I think that's instructive, but the other part could be that, I don't think the earnings outlook improves dramatically if we are going into a downturn, but the question also would be, how long is that downturn? And that's almost impossible to know. At his news conference not that long ago, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said something that, let's say at face value, sounds complicated, but it's actually not, where he said, essentially, recessions are nonlinear. And what he really meant by that is that, you know, they present unpredictable events and they're almost impossible to fully predict and let's say in their breadth and their depth and their duration. So I don't want to try to get too far over my would-be skis on that, but obviously economists do believe that the risk of recession has risen and that they probably have come forward on the timeline a little bit. But the question of the severity is a tough one to know.
You know, so the markets have been hanging on every utterance from the Fed since 2008, really, since we did the great financial crisis. We've been watching the Fed. The Fed somehow bailed us out then. And the Fed now has been controlling and guiding and trying to keep the economy on certain rails. And when doing so, all right, and trying to mute the volatility, they have also muted the natural life cycle of economic expansions and contractions. They said, we're not going to really have those anymore. We're going to go ahead and come in and try and dampen everything. But the problem with doing that, and they've done it, is it's taken a lot of damn money. We now have, you know, almost $32 trillion in debt as a country. The Fed's balance sheet hasn't shrunk that much despite the increased rates here. So there's a lot of government cash out there keeping this whole thing alive. And at some point, to paraphrase, who was it, Reagan or Thatcher? At some point, don't we begin running out of other people's money?
Well, you know, the Fed takes electronic credits on the balance sheet and doesn't actually have to have any in the first place. I think that's one of the challenges, Michael. But, you know, I mean, that really is. It is essentially, it can make it up out of thin air. And to some degree, it continues to do that with the rescues in the financial system of late.
I spoke with a 27-year-old doctor yesterday, Mark, and he was asking me, he said, tell me, how much debt the Fed is adding. I said, oh, the Fed's not adding debt. The Fed will purchase debt, but they're not adding debt. And he said, you mean when the Fed adds $8 trillion, it doesn't show up in the national debt? I said, no. Why? I said, because it's different. How is it different? And when you start to go down that rabbit hole and really try and explain it, the glaze you see on people's faces is really amazing. But and the idea that they can create money essentially out of thin air to solve problems and to take it away is very, very odd. All right. I have been saying, Mark, that I really don't want the Fed to ease. I'm going back to my opening comment here that we've been living and dying on every breath of the Fed, and Wall Street is desperate for the Fed to get back into easing mode. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't want the Fed to ease, because when the Fed eases, they're going to be backed into a very tight corner that is going to feel miserable for the rest of us. The very best thing that could happen would be that ideal soft landing, that they've done everything right. The economy will just settle down and start progressing along at that 2% to 3% GDP growth again, and they won't have to ease. That would be fabulous, but I don't see it happening. I do see a recession coming. I think that this bank tightening and I think also the consumer running out of cash, the inflation that we've seen, is backing things down into stop mode. That's what recession means, slowing and stop. What am I missing, Mark Hamrick? You have that wonderful bankrate.com survey that you do every quarter. You're kind enough to include me as one of your participants. I have been very consistent in my expectations for a recession. But as some people have criticized, it's Far, you always say recession's about 6 months away, and it does feel that way.
Well, first of all, I think you're absolutely right in the sense of it feels like these cycles occur much more dramatically and quickly with a shorter timeline than what we have experienced in the past. Of late, of course, we went through an economic expansion that lasted about a decade, and that got to be almost boring, but it was ultimately a pretty good thing for the economy and investors and workers. I think one of the important points here, Michael, about, let's say, the consumer and their ability to spend or not, and obviously we've seen them leaning, broadly speaking, more and more, for example, on credit cards and credit card debt. We've seen, for example, in a bank rate survey not that long ago in the last couple of months, where more than a third of Americans said they had more credit card debt than emergency savings. Americans have less emergency savings now than they had a year ago. But the job market is one of the pillars of this economy that has not given up yet, at least in the metrics. And I think that might be the one thing that is at least so far proving to be a bit of an insurance policy or of a salvation, but we don't know how long that will persist. In terms of our ongoing economist survey, which is yet to close as we speak, what I can tell you is, and we'll have these stories published at Bankrate in the coming days under the Bankrate Economic Indicator survey that we've been doing for almost a decade now, is that all the participants have, for the most part, raise their assessments of the risk of a recession between now and the end of the year. Those risks over the previous two quarters had been put at basically 50-50, meaning the chances were about even. And now it's looking to me like it's going to be above that. In other words, that the chances are greater that a recession occurs than not. But I do think it's important, Michael, to think about the fact that, you know, we went through the great financial crisis, the not so great recession, the recession that was short and not so sweet at the beginning of the pandemic. And respectively, the unemployment rates at those two times were 10% and 14.7. As wow. The Federal Reserve looks at, you know, the outlook for unemployment over the next 2 years, even though I think, you know, they probably can imagine some potentially dire scenarios while not necessarily enunciating the likelihood of them, they only have the unemployment rate going up to 4.5%, Michael. I think that's remarkable when so many people are sort of thinking buy canned goods, you know, and that's, you know, I'm not of the buy canned goods variety per se, but I think it's smart to have emergency savings and paying down debt at this time.
You know, Mark, I think you're absolutely right. This unemployment rate is the real issue. When I've gone back and looked, about 5.25% unemployment to 5.5% unemployment is the rate of parity to CPI. Okay. It's about CPI parity, meaning when we have a 5.25%, 5.5% unemployment rate, the inflation rate is growing at about the same as GDP. We're back in that 2.5% to 3% range of inflation when you're that high. And so you don't have it driving inflation. It's not a driver. It's not driving more inflation. It's increasing. You have employment gains at around that 2.5%, wage gains, 2.5%, coming up about the same as CPI. Right now, that's not the case. Right now, it's not the case. And yet, because we have this JOLTS number, this jobs openings number, that's about twice as many job openings as people who are listed looking for jobs. And that's the problem. And that's a problem that's structural with the workforce, right? With the labor force, the size of the labor force for the folks who are retiring and for the growth of the population in the U.S., where we don't have any. There's no population, organic population growth in the U.S. And we stopped immigration. You know, I talked to Pat Harker, who's president of the Philadelphia Fed, in January or February, and we were talking offline. He said, this is a self-inflicted wound. We stopped immigration. We can restart immigration. We're a couple or 3 million jobs behind in terms of immigration coming in. Legal immigration, fine, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not being political. I need people to make donuts here. So this is a big issue that Mark is bringing up. How do you see us going into recession? Because I frankly find it almost impossible to see how that unemployment rate will go above 4% if you kind of do the math. And yet I sure see us going into recession based on the numbers for the consumers' competency to spend, ability to spend.
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we have seen remarkable stability in new claims for jobless benefits, which tends to be sort of the line of first defense or damage when the economy is weakening significantly. And that's what we saw in the early days of the pandemic. But anecdotally, we do hear that employers may not be filling the positions that are open. So maybe that JOLTS number is giving us a little bit of a false clue in the number of job openings that are seen all across the country. And of course, if more entities, more organizations, more businesses obviously cut jobs, then those dynamics are going to be different. But I think that if the job market could hold up broadly here, that would be the thing that sort of helps us to get to that softer landing. But, you know, the other part is, as you know, Michael, there's a bit of a saying that's been around for a while, is that the Fed continues to raise rates until something breaks, and something did break here. The question is, how many other things, if any, will break? And therefore, you know, you do get to that more accommodative stance on the part of the central bank than one that's been tightening.
And we have to see if that break was significant enough for catch the Fed's attention. Will the Fed say, oh, yes, that was it? Or will they say, no, that's kind of gone away now. We're past that crisis and we still have inflation data that are unacceptable to us. These are the big questions. And yet markets are rallying. There seems to be a disconnect in here somewhere. Maybe it's that old question of when wish replaces thought. I don't know. We'll see in time. Mark Hamrick is the Bureau Chief, Chief Market Economic Strategist for Bankrate, and our great friend. Mark Hamrick, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, my friend.
That's it for another Farcast, ladies and gentlemen. As we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world, we'll be back again next week in the month of April, beginning the second quarter, as we continue on with season 6 of the Farcast. Finally, quickly, happy anniversary on Saturday to my dear bride of 34 years this Saturday, April 1st. Yes, it's April 1st. And a reminder that if you're going to stay married 34 years, you better have a sense of humor. At least she better anyway. And I assure you she does. I'm grateful to each of you. Please share us on social media. We'll be back next week. For the Farcast, Harry Jennings and all of us, I'm Michael Farr.
That's it for another episode of the Farcast. Thanks to our guest, Kenny Pulcari, Dan Mahaffey, and special guest, Mark Hamrick. And thanks to you, our listeners. We hope you enjoy the show as much as we enjoy making it for you. Please share us with friends and colleagues. The Farcast comes to you weekly. It is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and is available for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and all major podcast platforms. We love hearing from you every week, and you can reach us at hjennings@farmiller.com. Let us know any questions you have and topics you'd like to hear us cover. We would like to remind you that the Farcast podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions expressed or provided in this podcast, including by speakers who are not officers, employees, or agents of Hightower Advisors or Farr, Miller & Washington, are not necessarily those of Hightower Advisors, Farr, Miller & Washington, or any firm any of our guests may represent. Any mention of a specific security should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell, and please be aware that past performance is not a guide to the future performance of any security, index, fund, manager, or strategy. We strongly recommend you review with a financial professional before you make any investment decision. And if we can be of assistance at Farr, Miller & Washington, please reach out to me at hjennings@farrmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'll be happy to put any of our listeners in touch with one of our investment professionals for a complimentary review of your portfolio and your investment goals. Take care, stay safe, and stay healthy. Join us as we continue Season 6 in April with scheduled guests Dana Peterson, Chief Economist from the Conference Board, fan favorites Jenny Harrington and Liz Young, and of course more from our regular guests, Jim Labenthal, Dan Mahaffey, Kenny Pulcari, and Jim Urio. Go beyond the headlines each week with the Farcast. Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Washington is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. Barr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC have not independently verified the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Barr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates, make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for the statements or errors or omissions or results obtained for the use of this information. Barr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates, assume no liability for any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to the information. This podcast and materials contained herein were created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Barr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented to any entity as tax or legal advice. Clients are urged to consult their tax or legal advisor for related questions.